Hi there, it's Darren Krause, editor of LiveWireCalgary.com. Thanks so much for once again joining us for the Live Wired in Calgary podcast, done in partnership with the fantastic folks at CJSW 90.9 FM. 2019 is a big year for LiveWire Calgary. We committed to bringing Calgarians a different brand of community news, and we believe we've done that and more. When we started this ambitious venture earlier this year, we were going to give it a year to see if we could generate enough traction in Calgary for both readership and financial support so we could commit to another year. As we turn the page into the new year, your support is more important than ever. Good journalism has a cost to it. By supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/livewirecalgary, we can pay journalists to find, develop, and deliver these stories for you. For 2019, we've made the decision to use all funds generated through Patreon to pay for quality local news. Nothing for operating costs, nothing for Brody or I, all towards producing content from a variety of journalism voices in Calgary. For $2, $5, $10 per month or more, you can ensure that strong, local, independent journalism thrives in Calgary. To do it, visit patreon.com/livewirecalgary. All right, enough from me. Enjoy the show. This is Live Wired in Calgary. Hey everyone, and welcome once again to Live Wired in Calgary. I am your host, Darren Krause, editor of LiveWireCalgary.com. I'm in studio here at CJSW 90.9 FM in Calgary, my very, very wonderful partners in this program, and it's all recorded here on the university campus on traditional Treaty 7 land. We've got a great show this month, one that you're sure to enjoy. Got a little bit of a Christmas feel to it, I guess. Some fun stuff, a little bit lighter. I've got the Chief Generosity Officer at Generous Solutions, Derek Deacon Rogers, to tell us more about his innovative ticketing solution that gives back to Calgary nonprofits and charities. Calgary writer Sean Hunter has a new book out in time for the holidays, and it's a clever tale about telling Calgary's story from as far back as 220 years ago through the words of writers. And what would a program be without a little bit of news? I've got ThinkHQ President Mark Henry, and he's going to be here to talk about some recent polling done by his firm that shows the NDP's tenure may be over this spring. All that, and we'll try to squeeze in some On Your Radar this month as we head into 2019. Enjoy. Follow us on Twitter at LiveWire Calgary, on Instagram at LiveWire _ Calgary, and like us on Facebook. So I first sat down with Derek Deacon Rogers, Chief Generosity Officer with Calgary company Generous Solutions, a couple of weeks ago. I was intrigued by his story and his desire to create a business that's purpose was to give back. Now Derek's joining me in studio to talk a little bit more about his startup. Derek, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So one of the things that really struck me was the path that led you to this point through the profit sector, I guess as we will call it, and into the nonprofit world. Kind of take us on that journey and tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today.
Sure, absolutely. So graduated Mount Royal a few years ago now and public relations. So I was doing corporate communications for oil and gas companies downtown. And my wife was pregnant with our first, and it was realizing that I needed to do something to give back. I can't just continue to take from society. So I was out for a walk along the Bow River at lunch hour, and a sea train wrapped in a Make-A-Wish banner goes from downtown into Kensington. And it checked off all the boxes of an organization I'd want to be involved with. And so I started volunteering the next week, and now it's been 8 years later, and I'm on the board of Make-A-Wish in Southern Alberta, and it's been part of how it just gives me so much value and so much good feelings to give back. So it's awesome.
And so it kind of helped prompt the premise for Generous Solutions. It's quite unique in your approach. Tell us how it works and why you decided to go this route.
Sure, absolutely. So it started with a Make-A-Wish meeting. We were looking for a way to sell tickets for an event that we had coming up. And we wanted a ticket solution and a donation collection solution that was done in a generous way that aligned with our values. Doing a bit of exploration, decided that this is something worth exploring. Built a ticketing platform, and the way that we set it up is we charge the person purchasing the ticket the fees. We spread the fees across everybody, so it doesn't cost money to the nonprofit to sell tickets. And then what we do is we charge a percentage fee, and we give a third of that fee back to the nonprofit as a profit-sharing model for them using our services.
And why did you decide to go this route? Like what was it about this type of thing that you thought would really make a good fit for nonprofits?
Aligned values around generosity and giving back. I think that it's something where nonprofits are very familiar with getting discounted for-profit technology solutions. And with that discount at the nonprofit rate that they give it, often what occurs is there's a limited or no customer support and no real alignment of values. It's you can use our platform, we'll give you a discount rate for it. And I didn't want to have that option. I'm tired of the nonprofits having to deal with that. And so the idea was, let's create something that's in a partnership with the nonprofits and actually help them with ticket pricing, event descriptions, bring some best lessons learned from different organizations and different prices for tickets or when to send out a reminder email or something like that. We can actually work with them because we help every one of them with their events.
So take me through just an average setup for a nonprofit. You know, like, how do they go from we have an event to the end product?
Sure, absolutely. So they usually reach out, and if they haven't done an event before, I have a little conversation with them, answer their questions on the actual technical, how it works and the fees and the setup and stuff like that. I send them a form. They fill out the form. I then create their page for them, select some images, make sure their logos are everywhere and people can tell it's their page. Then what they do is they'll take that link once that page is approved and they'll share it across social media, email list, newsletter, however they get their message out. I then send them, at this point, weekly reports so they can see who's buying, who's how their sales are going for their event. And then post-event, they get the payout of the event, so mm-hmm. all the proceeds, including the profit sharing. So we actually can turn the actual fact of selling tickets online into another moneymaker itself.
Well, that's good. So one of the things that I found interesting in our conversation was, I mean, there is the nonprofit aspect of this, but you've also had people who have used it for life events. Maybe take me through some of the examples that you've seen.
That was probably the most exciting thing for me was I built a ticketing platform to make the world a more generous place. And people are figuring out how to give their life events to an organization they care about. The first one we did was for a gentleman who passed away. He was well known within the city of Calgary, a big philanthropist. And what he wanted to do is, in lieu of flowers at his service, he wanted to collect donations. And he collected donations for a very well-known charity here in Calgary. And he raised over $60,000 at his funeral from his friends. And the thing that was really interesting to me about that one is they put the donation page in the obituary and sent it out across the different news wires and things like that where the obituaries are shared. And we were processing donations from Florida, from Toronto, from California, from Texas, and as well as Calgary. So just really showing that the global reach of the ability to help. And so this local nonprofit got funds from people across North America. So that was the first one. That was an In Lieu of Flowers funeral event. The ones that are kind of neat right now that are coming up are kids are donating their birthdays to nonprofits using our platforms. What they do is it's called a 5 and 5 party, and it was new to me. But what it is someone, they ask for $10 or any amount you would like, and half goes to the child and half goes to the charity of their choice. We're actually able to help the younger generation, the earlier generation. As a parent myself, I got 3 young kids. I can tell you they don't need 6 different LOL dolls or other things like that. The ability to actually pool that money together, get one thing that means something to them. But then they also get to go to the nonprofit, and most nonprofits are amazing with, they'll have a little check ceremony. So they get from the golf tournaments, you get those big, massive checks. And so the kids just thinks that that's phenomenal. My daughter did her birthday and donated, and she donated $65 to a nonprofit. And they had a big dry erase check that they wrote out in her name and a big picture. And if the nonprofits do it right, it's a great opportunity to bring in more funds for their organization, but it's also wonderful for social media. People love to see pictures of kids giving back. And as a parent, I can tell you when that nonprofit shared the picture of my daughter, I shared that with all my friends as well, because I'm a proud dad that my daughter gave back.
Well, and not only that, but I mean, it instills in the kid that giving back is a really good thing and something that you can, you know, that you can really feel good about.
Yeah. And especially in this time, I think we're with the economy the way it is in Calgary and the way things are going, The fact that that cost no money. It was wonderful that the organization, the nonprofit, didn't have to use any administration to run that, and the family or the child putting it on didn't have to either. I actually have a birthday coming up here in January, and I'll be launching my own page for fundraising for Make-A-Wish, and we're going to do a little raffle on there as well and sell some tickets and hopefully raise enough for a wish. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So, Derek, why do you think that this is a good way to give back to the Calgary community?
I think it's a needed way. I think what it is the democratization of technology across the nonprofit sector. I think that it helps nonprofits make more money because they're not paying for this, helps them build stronger relationships with their supporters, and helps them save time. The strongest relationships is a huge component. As any nonprofit or anyone will tell you, your ability to build a relationship with someone, your ability to not just come back for asks all the time. And that's probably what most technologies do. They focus very much on the ask and the activate. So the ability to buy a ticket, make a donation, something like that. What the other platforms and a lot of technologies lack is this ability to actually connect with them, appreciate the donation or the engagement they have, and then a cultivate piece. So how can you actually build a strong relationship, sharing stories, adding to your newsletter without there ever being an ask? Therefore, when you come back with that ask again, it's more likely that person will respond positively to that ask because you've spent the time to build the relationship. And if you don't have all the data from the platform that you're using, it's impossible to do that.
Again, it's Generous Solutions. You can find them at generoussolutions.com. Derek Deacon Rogers, Chief Generosity Officer, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
This is wonderful. Thank you, Darren.
If you like our brand of local news, make a pledge by visiting patreon.com/livewirecalgary. So when's the last time you read a novel or poem that gave you a little piece of Calgary? If you're like me, probably never. Sure, we read about our city in the news or commentary, but rarely do we read about it in prose. Joining me now is Calgary author Sean Hunter to talk about her new book, Calgary Through the Eyes of Writers. Sean, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Darren.
So maybe start off, just describe this book in your own words.
This book is a personal journey and a treasure hunt. The two go hand in hand all along. A very personal significance for me to find my city, the city where I grew up, in the pages of literature. Also a treasure hunt, because one thing led to another. I had no idea what was lying under the surface on the bookshelf, in the stacks of the library, in the files of the Glenville Archives. Treasures, and if someone were sitting on my shoulder while I was doing the research for this book, they would have heard continual gasps of excitement. There you go.
That's good. And, you know, you kind of said it was a little bit of a treasure hunt. One of the first things that struck me comes early on when you're laying the book's foundation, where Alberta writer John White said, Calgary is a poor city for the failure of authors to bring it alive. Now, you've got a collection of works. You've found stuff that goes way back to the 1700s. You know, you've got stuff that is more recent. So clearly that's not the case, is it?
No, it is not the case. Sometimes you accept these declarations and you carry on with your life and think they're true. But if you poke away at them, you find that perhaps they're not capturing the whole story. And John White, I thank him actually for poking me with a stick because I really did set out to see if I could prove him wrong. We're sort of our own worst enemies. We don't know what we've got. We don't know our own stories. Part of the reason that I structured the book the way I did, with my own narrative weaving these excerpts together, I didn't think we were ready as Calgary readers to see the excerpts standing alone, because we don't know how they fit into our history. So I structured the book like a walking tour. I've done a few walking tours, and I think we just need a little nudging.
Later on, there's a passage that talks a little bit about Calgarians kind of being unversed in our own literature. Clearly, you know, this book shows that it's out there. But if a place is to be understood and perhaps even loved, is one of the passages in the book, again, as you're setting it up, we need to listen to its stories. Do we listen enough? The stories are out there. Why are we not seeking them out?
Well, I would argue that more and more people are seeking them out. We're in a very interesting moment. Not this current economic moment is interesting, but even leading up to this point, I felt it starting in the early 2000s when I was reading writers in local publications talking about what's going on here. We're approaching 1 million people. A city of 1 million people is a different beast. Who are we? Where are we going? Are you a buffalo hunter? Or are you someone who's going to stay? Because to build a culture, and I'm quoting somebody, and I'm not sure who, maybe Robert Croce or Aretha Van Herk, to build a culture, you have to stay. More and more people are staying in Calgary. It's still a city of migrants, but at 1.4 million, more people are staying. We've kind of, we're reaching a maturity, I think. And so look at Jane's Walk weekends, which started about 10 years ago in Calgary. The crowds of Calgary people on those walks, hungry for Calgary stories. So I'm not prepared to say we as a collective aren't interested. People are interested. More and more people are interested. And I think that's a very good sign.
So you wanted to talk to me about Catherine Gauvier?
Catherine Gauvier, yes.
Gauvier, yeah.
Yes.
And her book and kind of how it fits into the whole, you know, narrative of,
okay,
of Calgary through the, or Calgary through the eyes of writers.
I talk in the book in my introduction about the absence of Calgary on the country's literary map. Mm-hmm. And I refer to a map drawn in 1936, a literary map of Canada. And Calgary has three titles associated is listed for three titles. Fast forward to 1979, and there was another map. The Edmonton-based publisher Mel Hertig funded another map, literary map of Canada. Okay, that's 40 plus years. Five titles, from three to five titles. Okay, what's going on there? Between Men is a novel set in Calgary, about Calgary, published in 1987 by Catherine Gauvier. And interesting, there's a lovely, when a book first came out, the book critic at the Calgary Herald was a fellow named Ken McGugan. And he's an acclaimed Canadian writer. He's moved on from Calgary, but he was here running the book pages. And the story he wrote about Catherine Gauvier's Between Men, the headline is, Between Men puts Calgary on the literary map. Okay. I pulled out my copy of Between Men today. The story, part of the story is set in 1889 Calgary. And there's a scene, there's been a very horrific murder on First Street West above a tavern of a Cree girl, 15-year-old girl, savage murder, true story. The small town of Calgary is in a hubbub about this. And here's a quote from that particular scene. They're in another bar on First Street West. This matter of getting on the map, first it was the railway. That was going to do it. Then the boom. Then the fire of 1886. And still it hadn't happened. There was a sense of something owing. Well, you know, this ties in completely to my motivation. I started out thinking I was going to do a literary map of Calgary. And I realized I had too much. And I wanted to include much more than I could on a map. We're always waiting, or we have always been waiting, for people to put us on the map. And ultimately, do we not have to map our own city? I have another quote in the book from Alberta literary historian George Melnick, who wrote the two-volume Literary History of Alberta almost 20 years ago. Lots of people don't know about that. And I quote him in my book, "For too long, Albertans, sub-in Calgarians have thought more of other places, other people, other literature. You know, we can blame the center, the cultural center of the country for not putting us on the map. But at some point, do we not just have to map our own city?
It's really interesting. I mean, and it kind of ties into one of the other stories. Well, actually, let me ask you first, how many stories did you find on Calgary?
Well, there are 160 excerpts in the book.
Right.
I have a catalog on my computer of about 600 and a pile still to be cataloged. So
there's clearly a lot of reading people can do about Calgary.
There's material.
Right.
So, yes.
So through your journey, and one of the things that I picked out, John Ballam, he wrote about the political upheaval and the violence connected with Calgary's oil and gas industry. And at the time, the Prime Minister Trudeau of that time's National Energy Program. And it's interesting because we're going through a period of that again right now. Interestingly, in your research, I mean, obviously you've got hundreds of articles. Did you find that, like, the boom and bust cycle itself, Calgary's depicted in literature in a very cyclical fashion?
Change is a huge theme in this book, one of the big threads. Economic change, for sure. How many booms and busts have there been? It's part of the topography here. Change in our weather feeds. Writers love that stuff. Mm-hmm. If you got this metaphor in the sky that you can tie into story, like John Ballam talking about this very violent book, Alberta Alone. It was retitled Alberta Alone, sold tens of thousands of copies, maybe mostly to Calgary oil people. I'm not sure. there's some interesting threads between John Ballam and a Toronto writer, Barry Callahan, who came to interview John Ballam in 1983 when the economy was tanking and was quite offended by the violence in Ballam's book and like, you guys aren't really that mad, are you? Come on. You know, this kind of stuff, poking and prodding at him. And John Ballam he died a few years ago. He was a very proper corporate oil and gas lawyer. He always had a double-breasted suit on. And I can just see him getting cornered in his Scotia Cent Tower office by this guy from Toronto out to skewer whatever he found. You know?
Yeah, to kind of perpetuate that Calgary stereotype,
but,
in a sense.
Right. And I mean, maybe someone from the center will look at this book and say, oh, guess what? Yeah, there's violence. But in this climate of change, economic, topographic, climate, Chinook weather, there's a lot of vulnerability. And the writers, I gravitated towards those kinds of pieces. I wanted to see the vulnerability in the city, the fragility. That, to me, made it more whole of a place.
What's the one thing? This has obviously been quite an extensive journey. As you mentioned, you still have piles of pieces to go through. But what's the one thing that you'll take away from writing this book that you think is something that you will share with others for many years to come?
I'll answer that with a little anecdote. I feel that I have always known Calgary was my home, but this working on this book has made me feel like I belong here. I wasn't sure I really belonged here before. I didn't see how I fit. So personally, that's how I fit. At the launch, a person came up to me to have her book signed, told me she was on the cusp of moving to Toronto. And after hearing my talk and holding the book in her hand, she says, I'm rethinking that decision. So I signed her book and I just put one word, stay. So I don't know. I'm going to be curious to see how that message, that's my own personal story. That's the personal engine. I intend to keep talking about it. I also just hope people are motivated to check out some Calgary stories and see that people have been writing Calgary for a long time.
Sean, where can we find the book?
Well, I hope you will be able to find the book at bookstores across Calgary. You can certainly order copies through the usual channels online. I know the independent bookstores will be selling them and are selling them. There you go. I'm doing some events in the new year. You can find those events on the website. I will always have a carton of books in the trunk of my car.
That's awesome. Pick one up this holiday season for those book lovers in your family. And I mean, they'll get to learn a little bit more about the city that they live in. Sean, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Darren.
After such a great interview with Sean Hunter, we're going to jump right into On Your Radar, where we take a look at a handful of things that are coming up in between our show, which runs monthly here on CJSW. First up, if you haven't checked it out, the Calgary Zoo always has their zoo lights displays. More than 2 million lights on at night at the zoo. Maybe, maybe not catch an animal there. It runs until January 5th, and tickets are $19.95 if you're 16 plus and $14.95 for anyone under 16. Also, we've got the big night. We're bringing in 2019. If you're looking for something to do with the family on New Year's Eve, the City of Calgary and the Central Library are hosting a free New Year's Eve celebration, complete with kids countdown at 9 p.m. Can you believe we're already headed into 2019? Wow. There's also outdoor events at Olympic Plaza that night and, of course, fireworks in the downtown to ring in the new year. Also, January marks the start of the High Performance Rodeo. It runs from January 9th to 27th next year, featuring drama, comedy, spoken word performances, and more. So for more information, visit hprodeo.ca. So 2019 will also bring with it a provincial election campaign and all of those wonderful things that go with it. In our final segment today, I talked via phone with Mark Henry. He's president of the public research firm ThinkHQ about some recent survey numbers they got from a panel done in late November. And let me tell you, spoiler alert, it doesn't look good for the ruling Alberta NDP.
NDP have a pretty tough road to re-election coming up. If you look at the decided vote numbers right now, the Conservatives have a 15-point lead province-wide, 50% of the decided vote versus 35% of the NDP vote. And the regional splits are not exactly looking good for the NDP. If you look at where they're strongest inside the city of Edmonton, also in the Edmonton region, getting a little bit weaker in the Edmonton region, though. But outside of the two major centers, they're really suffering from a significant deficit compared to the Conservatives. And in Calgary will be the ridings to watch, because there's 15 ridings in Calgary that without those seats, the NDP can't win. Those are the ridings that I think are going to be the most interesting. And the challenge for the NDP is that they're tracking right now at historically, you know, high numbers in terms of their vote intention, about what they got in 2015, but they're still trailing by almost 20 points. And it's because there's no longer a vote split.
I mean, I was pretty surprised to see the UCP numbers up around the 50% mark. I mean, that seems... Again, historically going back, 50% is usually a huge majority type area. Can you tell me what sort of factors you think have kind of led to that, you know, aside from what you'd mentioned before, which is the vote splitting?
Well, I think the vote split was probably the most significant impact on that number. But if you look at, you know, the NDP have been government for almost 4 years, and over time, particularly, you know, it's been difficult times economically. One of the key questions that we ask, and we didn't release it here, but we asked people about what we would consider a ballot question, whether or not this government has had a positive or negative impact on your life personally. Those are the things that tend to motivate people to get out and vote. And you actually have over half of Albertans saying that this government has had a negative impact on their lives. And those are people who are going to be motivated to vote, and they're basically looking for change.
One of the other things I noticed in the numbers, Mark, was the, I guess you could call it the resurgence of the Alberta Party as maybe a center, maybe slightly left of center alternative. Is that eating away a little bit at the NDP's numbers as well?
It's eating away at both parties' numbers. I mean, the Alberta Party takes support away from basically all the others. They've been cannibalizing the Liberal vote, but they're also taking vote away from former, you know, people who voted PC while Rose and NDP in the 2015 election. It's interesting, their numbers, you know, a few months ago, they were actually trending above 10 percentage points. They were in the low teens, and now they're back down to 9%. You know, they really haven't done much over the course of the last year, despite the fact of having a new leader. I think Stephen Mandel may not have been the appropriate choice for them as a new leader.
That's awesome. Thanks so much, Mark. I really appreciate you taking the time. Again, we've got Mark Henry with ThinkHQ. You can find them at thinkhq.com. Mark, enjoy your holidays, and I'm sure we'll talk again in the new year.
Thank you, too, Darren. Take care.
All right, I've got a few seconds here to wrap up this month's show. As always, you can find us at livewirecalgary.com. Thanks to Derek Deacon-Roger, Sean Hunter, and Mark Henry for being so kind to join me this month. We are headed into the holiday now. It is Christmas Eve. You're settling in for the night. I'd like to wish all of our listeners a safe, joyful, and happy holidays, and we'll catch up with you again in the new year. So long.